HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.
Okay, so today I'm joined by Joe O'Connor. Joe is Global Pilot Program Manager for 4-Day Week Global. Joe, you're very welcome to the podcast. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Declan. Thanks for having me.
No, delighted to do so. It's an interesting thing you work on. With that in mind, do you want to explain to people what you do and what 4-Day Week Global do?
Sure. So 4-Day Week Global is a not-for-profit foundation based out of New Zealand, but operating all over the world. It was set up by Andrew Barnes and Charlotte Lockhart, who are two entrepreneurs who introduced the 4-Day Work Week in their own business, Perpetual Guardian, back in 2018. At the time, 4-Day Work Week was still much more of a niche idea than it is today. So they got a lot of global interest, attention, and coverage off the back of their own successful trial. Andrew wrote a book talking about the benefits of a 4-Day Work Week for businesses. So they set up this foundation really with two purposes in mind. The first being to promote and advocate for the concept of a 4-Day Work Week internationally, and secondly, to support companies to make the transition to reduced working time. So within that context, my role with the organization is as Global Pilot Program Manager. I'm currently coordinating pilot programs of the 4-Day Work Week in Ireland, the UK, Australia, New Zealand, and also here in the United States and Canada, where I'm currently based. And the idea behind this is that we're recruiting companies to join a 6-month coordinated trial of the 4-Day Work Week, and we offer them support and guidance through that process.
Very good. When you're talking to companies, Joe, about a 4-day work week, sorry, I'll have to get that one right as we talk. What sort of research, what sort of data, you know, are you guys relying on to support that it's a good idea for the individual, that it's a good idea for the organization?
Sure. Well, there's a lot of academic research and business case studies out there at this point that suggest that in most employments and sectors, 4-day work week can be introduced without any loss to productivity or any increased employment costs. It's also well established now in the literature that reduced work time has significant benefits in terms of employee well-being, which obviously can benefit the business then in other ways because people are more focused, more motivated, more energized at work. And really part of the motivation behind these programs is that we've over the last number of years worked with a lot of companies that have experienced some of the very positive outcomes that you've probably seen publicized from companies who have done this already. And what we're trying to do is to try and demonstrate that those positive outcomes can be replicated on a much broader scale with a lot of different companies across a lot of different industries and sectors, because we think that's what will hopefully move this from something which is certainly a growing conversation in the business world, but move it to something that's really right at the center of how we talk about the future of work, how we talk about how the business world will look like as we emerge out of the pandemic. Because we truly believe that this is something that can work for most, if not all, companies.
You touched on the pandemic. Has that accelerated this process? Are you finding it, is there more interest in it now or less or unchanged?
Yes, and exponentially so. The global interest and momentum in this, you know, almost day by day is increasing hugely with governments announcing new trials, you know, big businesses announcing that they're making the switch. And from our perspective, we think this is kind of down to a couple of different reasons. First of all, there's a worker employee demand element to this. You know, we've all heard about the grave resignation and the COVID-19 experience in terms of the rapid widespread switch to remote working. I think it's opened the eyes to a lot of workers that a different model of work is possible. But also from an employer perspective, you know, very much the model that we talk about is this idea of 180-100. It's about 100% pay, 80% time, but in exchange for a commitment to delivering 100% productivity. And it's really all about switching away from using time to measure people's contribution at work and really focusing on output rather than time. And that's something that probably back in 2018 or 2019 might have seemed like a somewhat radical idea. But after the experience of the pandemic, managers have had to find much more sophisticated ways to measure performance, to monitor performance. And, you know, because this idea of Declan was in the office at 8 o'clock this morning and he didn't leave till 9 last night, so he's really working very hard. You know, that hasn't been possible in the new reality. So we certainly feel it's really accelerated this shift for an awful lot of companies.
Yeah, I think a move away from that presenteeism as you know, is what everyone wants. And just before, I was about to ask you just about you know, how do companies arrive at the decision that they want to consider that. Just before I ask you that, or before you answer that, when you say 180, 100, I presume then, despite being called 4-day work week, you're not, you know, you're not absolutely attached to it being over 4 days. You know, it could be over 5 days if that suits an individual. Is that fair to say?
It is fair to say. I mean, there's a degree of clickbait in 4-day week in that, you know, that's the conversation starter. That's the, you know, the concept that really draws people to it. But what we're talking about is, you know, reduced work time, productivity focused working. And that can be done in a lot of different ways in a lot of different contexts and settings. It is our experience, however, on the demand side that, so for example, in our pilot programs, companies have the option to do this with a kind of a compressed 5-day schedule, so they can reduce the same number of hours pro rata, but continue to work 5 days. Our experience tends to be that that's only a small minority of companies that choose to pursue that option. And certainly from most employee surveys that we've seen worldwide on this, while there are, you know, somewhere between 10 and 15% of workers that would like some different version of reduced work time, the idea of the 4-day work week, that extra day, that extra time to be able to spend, you know, in all kinds of different ways, is something that people really value and is something that, given the choice, most workers have a preference for.
Yeah, sure. So but before, as I said, yeah, but what leads a organization to, you know, that decision point? How do they arrive at it typically?
Well, typically over the years, it's often very much a cultural thing in that companies use the shift to a 4-day work week as a focusing frame within their company. And they use it to try and, you know, they use it as a vehicle to try and generate efficiencies, to become better at prioritization. And that given that the whole concept is centered around working smarter rather than longer, that it can really, you know, provide a driver for a more focused, efficient organization. So up to the last year, the main reasons why companies have been drawn to this is from a productivity perspective or from a well-being perspective. And while they're still very much to the forefront of a lot of companies' decision-making on this, the one big change that we've noticed over the past 12 months is that recruitment and retention, which probably wasn't in the top three reasons why companies did this a few years ago, is now far and away the number one reason why we're experiencing companies coming to us saying, we're thinking about doing this. Because in an awful lot of different sectors, you know, remote, hybrid, flexible, blended working, that was a competitive advantage 2 or 3 years ago. That was a differentiator if you could offer that to your employees. Now, you know, it's almost a competitive disadvantage in an awful lot of different sectors if you don't offer it. So companies are looking for what's that new thing that will give us the edge in terms of retaining our best talent, in terms of attracting, you know, better candidates and more candidates for recruitment positions. And oftentimes they find that the 4-day work week is that. One company in the United States, Uncharted, who did this, you know, they're a tech company, and they talk about this in the context that they can't compete in the top 1% of salaries. They can't compete with Google or with Facebook for engineers and for IT consultants, but they can compete in the top 1% of work weeks. And in a world where, you know, people value that time more and more and more, companies are using this as a vehicle to attract better people and to keep their best people.
Yeah, it's interesting in that regard, Joe. It's, I mean, it's virtually no barriers to entry in a lot of ways. Is there any particular types of organizations that this works better for, or are there organizations or styles of work where it just doesn't work? What's your observations around that?
So we often get this thing where, you know, companies like the idea in theory, and they can see how, you know, I could see how that could work for X company and Y sector, but it wouldn't work for us because we're totally different. And our experience tends to be that when you start to work with them, those companies maybe aren't as different as they might think. And, you know, I could probably point to an example of how reduced work time, some version of a shorter working week, has been executed successfully in almost every type of sector internationally in the world at this point. It is the case that the kind of the critical mass here, you know, if you look at the companies we're recruiting into our pilot programs, the critical mass is in, you know, office-based employment, tech, IT, recruitment, consulting, marketing, those kinds of sectors, which you might call typically white-collar employment. That is where there's the largest volume of companies making the switch. But we also have companies in manufacturing. We have restaurant groups. We have political campaigning organizations. We have a lot of sectors that, you know, you might not associate with the idea behind reduced working time.
And I shouldn't presume. Is there any impact you feel around, say, roles that were traditionally more creative than other roles? You know, maybe there's a more need for collaboration, that sort of thing. Or again, is it fairly agnostic in that regard?
Yeah, I mean, it really is very, you know, there is no one size fits all way to do 4-day work week. There isn't a downloadable off the shelf toolkit. Most of our program is really about giving business leaders access to the expertise of a whole range of different people that have implemented this, often in very different ways, so that they can come to this and say, you know, that's the bit that I think would work best for my particular company or my particular context. It is common that certainly in creative industries, we would see a lot of companies who maybe previously billed their clients or customers hourly would switch as part of this to project-based or output-based billing. That's something that happens quite commonly. And just maybe to come back on your previous question in terms of, you know, sectors where this may not work as well. I mean, there are some sectors that we would acknowledge, you know, this idea of 180-100, where you can do this without any loss to productivity or without any increased employment costs. We think that that's the case in most sectors. But I'll give one example where it doesn't exactly work like that, and that's healthcare. So if you're, you know, would we say that you could introduce a 4-day work week for nurses and doctors and hospital consultants tomorrow without needing to hire more staff? And the honest, obvious answer is no. There are a huge amount of good reasons why we should be looking at reduced work time in those kind of settings, because it's one of the occupations where there's the greatest issue with stress, overwork, burnout, and obviously that can have a severely adverse impact on medical outcomes. But if you look at that, there was a trial done in a nursing care home setting in Sweden a number of years back, which was incredibly successful in terms of staff outcomes, was incredibly successful in terms of patient outcomes, but it required a 20% increase in staffing because they needed to. And the trial was that then not, you know, they didn't make that permanent. But I would look at that and say, if the patient outcomes were good, if the staffing outcomes were good, even though there was increased cost involved, you know, there are certain sectors of the economy that we need to be thinking about investing more resources in terms of hiring and recruiting more staff. And that's probably one of them.
Where does it go wrong, Joe, when companies do it? What are the common pitfalls?
So by far, the number one pitfall is the CEO complex. And it's effectively executives and managers approaching this from the perspective that they need to identify and solve every possible problem and every possible thing that could go wrong before they even trial it. Because, and one example, you know, the Wellcome Trust in the UK were a company who announced that they were going to trial this. They ended up abandoning it. And a lot of this comes down to one of the first things we would say to companies is, it's the process and it's the trial where you will get the solutions. And this needs to be bottom up rather than top down. You know, we always say to companies, don't just introduce this as a one-off policy choice. Introduce this on a trial basis where effectively people are, you know, this is so transformative for people's lives that it is such a motivating, focusing factor that if you're running a six-month trial, if you're really clear at a management level about these are the kind of targets we need to hit, these are the kind of metrics we need to achieve, and people know that the trial, the success of the trial is being judged on that basis, then they're so motivated to make it work and to make sure that. So, you know, this isn't about solving every problem in advance. This is about empowering team leaders, empowering staff to come up with the ideas, the solutions, the changes to work practices, you know, identifying the waste in their own workday in order to ensure that they can deliver the same output over 4 days rather than 5. So that's a a really, really key part of all of this is making sure it's not, you know, completely directed at the C-suite. It has to be something that everyone in the organization is empowered to be part of in terms of making it work for that particular company.
And it's sort of, I'm sort of looping back to one of the first things we talked about. You mentioned it has to be bottom up, and I totally get where you're coming from on that. Typically in an organization, someone somewhere, you know, hears about this, thinks about it or whatever, and starts that conversation. In your experience from working with other organizations or with organizations, has that been from the employees or has that been more C-suite, senior managers, or any particular trends?
Yeah, most of the incoming contact that we get is from CEOs, people operations managers, HR managers, you know, who are seeing this succeeding elsewhere and are considering it in the context of, you know, improving well-being, creating more focus around delivering productivity or for recruitment and retention challenges. So that's certainly where a lot of the demand for our programs is coming from. But there's no doubt that some of that is being driven by demand either within the organization or outside the organization in terms of seeing this as a differentiator and, you know, in terms of investing in your own people and attracting more talent into your organization.
And from an employee's point of view, so suddenly I'm on a 4-day work week, you know, I suppose the opposite question to where it goes wrong for organizations, where does it go wrong for individuals? If it does, sorry, again, pitfalls.
Yeah, well, like any major change management initiative, and, you know, we don't talk about this as a kind of a work-life balance policy, because actually the work-life balance benefits are almost, you know, they're built in from the start. That's well established. So from a business perspective, we would say you need to approach this as productivity strategy, a business improvement strategy, and talk about it in those terms. So like with any big change management initiative, there are some employees or members of teams that will embrace that easier and more quickly than others, and supporting them on that journey is really important. It's some staff are concerned that actually we're going to have to compress all of the work that we're currently doing into a shorter space of time, and actually we'll be more stressed and it can be more intensified and so on. And that's why, you know, there's two key elements to this. The first is efficiency. You know, so a lot of the companies that have done this, it's really simple solutions like cutting back on the length of time that they're spending on meetings and, you know, having more efficient meetings, creating more focused time for people to hone in on key tasks, identifying lower value activities that don't really contribute to the bottom line and starting to wean them out of the business. So that's one big element of it. And then the other side of it is prioritization. This isn't necessarily about doing everything that you currently do only in shorter time. This is about getting better at prioritizing the things that actually matter for your company and matter for your organization. So if you approach it, you know, from both of those perspectives, it's not all about efficiency and it's not all about prioritization. It's a mix of both. Generally, you know, we've certainly seen some companies where they might have issues with some employees who are finding it difficult to grapple with at the start. But if the company is committed to it from a leadership level, then over time, those people tend to get more comfortable and more comfortable with it within the organization.
So what does a typical pilot program look like, Joe?
So the program that we're running effectively, it's got a 12-month timeline in the sense that we spend 3 months generally in a country recruiting companies who are interested in trialing a 4-day work week. And there's then another 3-month period of pre-trial preparation where we support those companies to get trial ready. And then there's the 6-month coordinated trial itself. And we offer company support under 4 main headings. So they have access to training workshops, which are designed, led, and developed by international business leaders, CEOs, consultants, HR managers that have successfully adopted the 4-day work week in their own company or in different industries. They have access to mentoring where we would match up each participating company with someone who will advise and support and guide them through the trial. Generally, we try to do that matching based on similar size, similar sector, and so on. And they have access to networking in that they'll join a almost like a peer support structure whereby we have an online community of all of the companies who are trialing this in their sector, in their country, and worldwide. And that's really useful in terms of, you know, sharing ideas, sharing experiences, cheering approaches to challenges that might come up. And then the final piece is the research. So we have a research partnership in place, which is led by a professor and a team in Boston College here in the US. And then we have institutional academic research partners, depending on the country. So in Ireland, it's University College Dublin. And effectively, what they do is they work with each company to establish what their baseline is pre-trial. So what does their current productivity look like? What's their current employee well-being? What's their current energy use and carbon emissions under the five-day work week? They'll then monitor, track, those metrics across the six-month trial. And at the end, they'll produce an impact assessment for the company, which demonstrates what impact the four-day work week had on those different variables. And that obviously then informs that company's decision as to whether they make the policy permanent or not.
Yeah, interesting. I would have considered it a side effect, but that sort of green agenda is sort of promoted as well, in at least in theory. Joe, really interesting. Thank you so much for joining us today. If people want to have a conversation with you or explore what you guys do a bit further, what's the best way to get in contact?
They can contact me on joe.o'connor@fourdayweek.com, and certainly any Irish companies interested in piloting the four-day work week. And we have 17 firms who are starting their trial on the 1st of February, but we're running later programs in the UK and in the US, and certainly we'd be happy to accommodate Irish companies on that timeline if we had companies interested in taking part.
Brilliant, and we'll link all of that below the podcast as always. Joe, thanks for joining us today.
No problem. Thanks yourself, Declan. Good to chat.
That was great, Joe. Thank you.
No bother. Cheers.
Really, really interesting. I don't know if sorry, I'm just thinking on my feet, and we can talk about this separately. Don't have to today, but we might be interested in seeing how someone's going, doing like almost a case study as we went. If you had anyone over here who was about to embark on it and wanted to check in with us now and again, might be of interest. Have a think about it.
Yeah, well, that won't be a problem, because as part of what we're doing, it's kind of optional for companies. Some companies
are really. Stop the recording. Sorry, I'm just going to stop the recording.
No bother.